TexasObserver.org, you're listening to Observer Radio. I'm your host, Jonathan McNamara. Each week, our half-hour program features writers from the Texas Observer and other esteemed guests for a conversation about the biggest issues in Texas politics and culture. In the studio this week, we're joined by Observer Associate Editor Forrest Wilder and Observer Staff Writer Melissa Del Bosque. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Great to be here.
Later in the show, we'll be joined by freelance writer and the editor and publisher of Lone Star Q, John Wright. Wright recently published a story in The Observer about a Texas woman relocated from California who was denied a driver's license because she took her wife's name in a same-sex marriage. But before we get to that story, let's talk about political campaigns. Obviously, everybody in The Observer has been talking a lot about the debate between Greg Abbott and Wendy Davis. But today we're talking about the political campaigns that are not happening in the public sphere. The, as Forrest Wilder puts it, art of the non-campaign. So Forrest, we'll start with you. Let's talk about what Dan Patrick and Ken Paxton have been up to recently.
It's a funny story because it's a story about things not happening. Dan Patrick and even more so Ken Paxton are running non-campaigns or stealth campaigns, was how the Houston Chronicle...
Covert campaigns.
Yeah. Dan Patrick, of course, is running for lieutenant governor. He's the GOP nominee. He's running against the Democrat, Leticia Vandepute. They're both state senators. And Ken Paxton is running for attorney general to replace Greg Abbott. He's the GOP nominee. He's running against a guy with a name, a Democrat named Sam Houston. Great name.
I've heard that name before.
Yeah. The Republicans are heavily favored to win. They both have other reasons why they may not be doing too many public appearances, why in the case of Ken Paxton, he's basically refused to debate his opponent, why Dan Patrick has agreed to only one debate with Leticia Vandepute, why they're not really holding press conferences or speaking to reporters or publicly announcing events, with a few exceptions. In Dan Patrick's case, it's because I think that there's no real strategic reason for him to engage.
Is that because he thinks he already has it sewn up? Or?
Well, yeah. I mean, a Democrat hasn't won statewide office in Texas since 1994. I mean, we say this all the time, but it is one of the most salient facts in Texas political life. Leticia Vandepute is actually a pretty strong candidate as far as Democratic candidates go, but she still has very much of an uphill battle.
Sure.
I think that Vandepute likes that she's running against Dan Patrick, who has a long history of saying some pretty extreme things. Of course, he was a talk radio show host for many years. That's how he got his start.
Those guys tend to be pretty extreme.
They tend to say lots of things that, you know, could come back to haunt you. So I just think that, you know, the idea here is keep your head down low, wait till November to roll around, and let the huge structural advantages that Republicans have go into effect, and you're going to be the next lieutenant governor, right? In Ken Paxton's case, who's running even more of a stealth campaign, I found one article in Google News archives about a public appearance that Ken Paxton had made, right, in the past month. He will not speak to reporters. He doesn't hold press conferences. He's just kind of off the radar completely. Incidentally, he is facing some serious ethics charges and even possibly an indictment for some business he engaged in as an attorney. He violated Texas securities law. He was acting as an attorney for clients at the same time that he was directing these clients to an investment partner that he had and receiving a kickback for those services, and did not disclose it to his clients, nor did he register with the Texas Securities Board, which you're required to do. So that's a dark cloud that's hanging over him. And of course, you know, he's not just running for any office. He's running to be the next attorney general, you know, the top lawyer in the state, the guy who will be in charge of representing the state in legal matters, who will be in charge of enforcing Texas Open Meetings Act and Texas Open Records Law, as well as a whole host of other issues. So
There's got to be more to it than that, though, right? I mean, he's not just trying to avoid talking about that.
Oh, I think he is. I mean, there might be more to it, but I think that you know, I think that that is probably the main reason. I mean, what is he supposed to say? Why, if he can get away with not having to answer tough questions, if you can get away with that as a politician, why wouldn't you do that?
Right.
I mean, I think the answer is that we presumably live in a democracy and citizens should be allowed to make informed choices about the about candidates based on them engaging in the public process. But again, if there's no, like, no one's forcing you to do it and you're likely to win regardless, then just on some sort of rational basis without regards to the morality or ethics of it, why wouldn't you do it? And I don't think that, I think Paxton is terrified of answering questions and you know, just doesn't see a reason to engage. So there you go.
Yeah, I think when I read your story, I felt genuine anger. Like it really made me mad that they,
right.
Which is saying something, right? Because we write about a lot of things at the Observer that can really be upsetting. But just the fact that these guys have such a good chance of winning and they're not even going to engage with the public or you know, debate their who they're running against. I mean, it's just, it's like totally outrageous and so undemocratic, you know, it's like,
right.
And if they win, it's like, it's worse, you know, it's
right.
Like, it's like, yeah. So then what does that say once they're in office, you know, if that's their policy in the election, so are they going to be open to questions or?
I mean, Dan Patrick, if he's lieutenant governor, that is a very, you know, we have a legislative session that starts in January. If he wins, he'll be presiding over the Senate. The lieutenant governor's dais in the Senate is like 10 feet away from the press table. You know, Dan Patrick, He actually did hold a press conference last week before last. It lasted 15 minutes. He basically had some business people there with him, and he said, "I'm the business friendly candidate," and then was gone. Didn't really take any questions. At some point, I think it was at this event, he turned to whatever reporters were there and said, "You know, I've been the most press friendly guy in the legislature," and then ran off before. Without taking any questions, but to answer your question, I mean, I think that in Dan Patrick's case, yes. I mean, I just think the goal is to get past November, and then you know you're in office, and you don't have to run for re-election for 4 years. In Ken Paxton's case, the attorney general is a little bit more distant from the press and typically speaks through spokespeople rather than directly. I don't know. I think Paxton's a little bit more of an unknown quantity, and he has this additional problem of facing a criminal investigation and possible indictment. That's never a positive in terms of public relations for a politician.
Should these candidates win, I wonder if anything will change on this front. I mean, they certainly don't seem to feel any public pressure to be vocal now. Can we anticipate that they'll feel more pressure once they're elected? Should they be elected?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think this is all about the election season. This is all about campaigning, or in this case, not campaigning. This is about winning in November. I do think things will change once we get past November. But it's not. I mean, once the precedent is set, I mean, that's part of the thing here is that this is becoming a precedent. This is becoming like the way that you do politics. As I wrote in the piece, you know, Rick Perry kind of pioneered a little bit of this in 2010. He refused to debate Bill White, who was a Democratic candidate, and Bill White ended up having a debate with a Libertarian candidate because Rick Perry was a no-show. Rick Perry refused to speak with newspaper editorial boards, you know, all the, you know, Houston Chronicle, Austin American Statesman, Dallas Morning News, San Antonio Express News, et cetera, all expressed outrage. How dare this man who wants to run for governor not abide by this tradition of meeting with newspaper editorial boards so we can decide which candidate we want to endorse. And the sad fact of the matter is that newspaper editorial boards don't really have much influence on the outcome of Texas elections anymore because Republican voters tend not to listen to them. And there's the media is so fractured and there's so many different information silos and places you can get your information that they just don't have the impact. So Rick Perry made, again, a rational and strategic choice not to run the risk of perhaps saying something stupid, as he sometimes does to editorial boards. And I also think that possibly part of the calculus was that a lot of the Republican voters actually like when their politicians snub the, you know, the lamestream media. There's one way of looking at this that is sort of how dare they, and then there's another way of looking at it, which is basically like, I think a lot of the, you know, base voters would say, great, awesome, good job, guys.
And when we talk about a stealth or a covert campaign, as some of the other newspapers have characterized it, I mean, Dan Patrick and Paxton, are they're going around and they're talking to like Tea Party groups, and are they talking to certain bloggers, right, or writers
who
have a lot of influence with their base, which is the Tea Party base?
Yeah, and that's really important, because it's not, and I'm going to take them one at a time. Dan Patrick actually is apparently doing lots of events. They're not being announced so that the press can show up to cover them. And their events, they tend to be Tea Party events, okay? So, I mean, he's running to be governor of Texas, you know, population 26 million or something like that. But the voters that he's targeting tend to be, you know, your very conservative Tea Party type voters. That's largely who he's speaking to, and seems not very interested in engaging with the broader public, or, you know, directly or through the media, right? In Ken Paxton's case, it doesn't seem like he's doing very many events at all. You know, we know that Dan Patrick's doing events because he is mentioning them after the fact on his Facebook page, and he said he's done 1,300 something events in the past, you know, year. I can't remember the time frame, but in the past little while. Ken Paxton has said no such thing. There's no record of him, except in the past month of doing events in local newspapers, except one time in the Houston area. He has a fundraiser with Ted Cruz on Monday. That's the only event that I could find that he's announced and is upcoming. And it's if you want to go, it's $75.
We should mention that's Monday the 29th.
Monday the 29th, that's right. So Paxton doesn't appear to be doing much campaigning, to answer your question. I don't think you could even call his campaign a stealth campaign. I think his probably is getting closer to just a non-campaign campaign.
Right.
Dan Patrick is more of a covert or stealth campaign.
I mean, his calculation, Dan Patrick's calculation, is that all he has to do is appeal to the Republican primary voters, those very, very involved, vocal Tea Party faction of the Republican primary. So, and he doesn't want media there that aren't in, you know, involved with the Tea Party, because then one of those 47% comments like happened to Mitt Romney or something like right. that will come out and it'll affect him in the general.
He has nothing to gain and potentially something right. to lose by it. Right. I mean, I think that's, you know, and this is one of the broader themes in Texas politics, which is that the center of gravity has shifted very far to the right because of the weakness of the Democratic Party and the fact that the Tea Party is triumphant in the Republican Party, and elections are essentially decided during the primary. When you're talking about a subset of a subset of a subset of the citizenry, much less the voting, you know, population.
Well, Forrest, thanks for sharing that story with us.
Thanks.
You can read Forrest's story on the art of the non-campaign on TexasObserver.org. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Observer Radio, a half-hour news show from the folks at the Texas Observer. Earlier this week, The Observer published a story about a Texas woman relocated from California who was denied a driver's license by the Department of Public Safety. She was denied because of her last name, a name she took when she entered into a same-sex marriage. Here to discuss this story and its fallout is Lone Star Q editor and publisher John Wright. John, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So, if you wouldn't mind, could you introduce us to Connie Wilson?
Connie Wilson is a woman who now lives in the Houston area, who recently relocated from California with her partner and their three children, and for her partner's work specifically. And so when she got here, obviously, she went to the local DPS office to get her Texas driver's license, and that's when this situation unfolded.
And what exactly happened?
Well, she went with all her documentation, which she had changed her name through her same-sex marriage in California, and she had several pieces of documentation with her married name on them, including her Social Security card and her California driver's license and all of her medical and financial records. Unfortunately, she also had a birth certificate that has her birth name on it.
Sure.
When the DPS employee noticed that, the DPS employee requested, you know, further documentation as to how she had changed her name. And Connie Wilson produced her California marriage license. At that point, the DPS employee noticed that the name of her spouse on the marriage license was Amy, which, you know, most people named Amy, I guess, are female. And so the employee asked whether it was a same-sex marriage, and of course it is. And at that point, the DPS employee told Connie Wilson that she could not have that name on her Texas driver's license and suggested a variety of other options, but basically told her that not only could she not have it now, but she will never be able to have that name. And it's, in fact, suggested that it's not even really her name. So apparently this employee may have had some personal beliefs that were kind of influencing her statements to Ms. Wilson.
Is it a matter of policy, or is it just one employee speaking out of turn?
Well, apparently it is a matter of policy, and it may be, you know, the policy may be open to interpretation, or it may be enforced differently at different offices or by different employees. But according to, you know, DPS headquarters, the policy is that you cannot change your name through a same-sex marriage, that they will not acknowledge that. In order to change your name, you have to go get a court order changing your name in Texas from a Texas court. So that is, in fact, the DPS policy, yes. And they have, you know, confirmed that to multiple outlets since, you know, the Observer broke the story.
Is it – I mean, Texas obviously has banned same-sex marriages both in the Constitution and in statute. How does that – I guess they've just decided that it extends to sort of bureaucratic administrative things like what your name is on your driver's license.
Yeah, I mean, basically it sounds – I mean, they've extended it to ridiculous and really absurd lengths, it seems to me, because, you know, everybody knows you can't – a same-sex couple can't get a divorce in Texas. Everybody knows that, you know, that or most people know that a same-sex couple – cannot get both of their names on a birth certificate if they have a child in Texas. But this just goes beyond the pale. I mean, it's, you know, you're basically denying someone the right to have documentation or ID. I mean, it's just, it's, I mean, it goes beyond anything that in my, you know, 7 years in LGBT media in Texas that I've heard of. You know, it's just... very
extreme. It seems
kind
of petty.
And yeah, I mean, and ridiculous because, you know, to me, the ultimate thing here is that this policy hurts Texas, you know, economically. Who would want, what company or what employee of what company would want to relocate here knowing that they're not going to be able to get a driver's license with their name on it? It's, you know, so Governor Perry, you know, spends all this time recruiting businesses in other states, try to get them to come to Texas, and it just seems to undermine those efforts because you have a national now news story about how Texas won't even issue accurate driver's license to LGBT people. So,
and this one of the interesting things here is as more states have legalized same-sex marriages, you know, we still have many states, Texas among them, of course, that have not. People move among the different states, so we're setting up these conflicts between states that recognize same-sex marriages, states that do not. Are there other areas where this might produce problems for people as well as legal challenges trying to rectify these conflicts?
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole host of issues, you know, and I think there's like at one point that a list of 1,200 different rights that come through marriage that same-sex couples were denied. Now, the federal government has, you know, chosen to recognize same-sex marriages, and so therefore same-sex couples now have those rights federally, which is how Connie Wilson, for example, was able to obtain her Social Security card with her married name on it. But then you have individual states like Texas, of course, who still aren't recognizing that. So there's a myriad, you know, issues and daily, you know, problems and challenges that LGBT people face. And I think that really, this really puts a face on that and, you know, kind of reminds people that this is not some hypothetical legal concept about, you know, heightened scrutiny. And, you know, this is like a very real daily problem that people face with regard to discrimination against LGBT people.
Since you published a story on the Observer website, it's had a huge amount of feedback, and I think there's been almost 500 comments. It's had a lot of reach. And I'm wondering, has DPS responded in any way? Have they gotten anywhere with DPS? And sort of what's the latest with the impact after the story ran?
The latest I heard was the Dallas Morning News article that appeared, I believe, today, and had a little bit of elaboration from DPS, but it's basically the same thing. I mean, they're saying that the policy is based on the 2005 constitutional amendment, which, you know, bans same-sex marriage and any recognition of it. As far as I know, there has been zero movement on the part of DPS. They're digging in their heels, which frankly is not surprising at all. You know, you think about who's, you know, the folks that are making these legal decisions, and it goes back, of course, probably to the AG's office, and that very same AG's office is also fighting tooth and nail, not only same-sex marriage, but same-sex divorce, and on that same grounds that, you know, on the argument that if we allow you to get a divorce, we are recognizing your marriage, and that's just a slippery slope, you know, that we don't want to go down. So
what, practically speaking, what is Connie Wilson and going to do? They told her she could get a court order, is that right? Is that her plan?
She could get a court order. My understanding of her plan at this point, without divulging too much, there's some details that she asked me not to mention, but you can get a driver's license with a passport and without having to produce any kind of identification. And in fact, that would kind of be my advice if there's same-sex couples moving here from other states, would be to renew their passport, and because that document is one of the documents that you don't need any other document to go with to get your license. She unfortunately had an expired passport. My understanding is that she is in the process of renewing that passport. Unfortunately, at this point, she's probably already in the DPS system to some extent, and certainly on their radar. So it's questionable whether, you know, her file has been flagged, so to speak, and whether, you know, even if she gets a passport, whether she'll be able to obtain her license. So we'll have to certainly keep an eye on that.
So the workaround for people who maybe are just entering the process is to have a current passport with the name that you want on your driver's license if you were married to a person of the same sex in another state.
Correct. If you're relocating here from another state now, or even I guess if you're an existing Texas resident and you go to another state and enter a same-sex marriage.
Like Anise Parker, the mayor of Houston, who was married in it was Washington State or California.
It was California. Yeah. Theoretically, yes, you should be able to get a passport and use that passport to get a license. But this goes back to where there seems to be some discretion, you know, on the part of DPS in these situations. Because I moved to Texas 8 years ago. To be honest, I don't remember presenting anything beyond my out-of-state driver's license and a Social Security card in order to get my license. So it seems like, you know, they don't always necessarily follow the letter of the law. And so, you know, it's questionable whether this particular employee had personal beliefs that were kind of influencing the way they handled the situation.
We had some readers ask if this would affect your voter registration, if this issue could arise in the context of registering to vote.
Yes, I think it could, because now you need a photo ID, right, to vote in Texas. And I actually spoke with a gentleman, you know, numerous other one thing that's important to point out here is that Connie Wilson is not alone. I think there's some other folks in the comments who've said they encountered the same problem. And then I actually spoke with another gentleman who had the same problem this week. And it was funny, he actually told me that, so he was in a same-sex marriage from Massachusetts, and he moved here from Rhode Island. and was denied. He has a hyphenated last name, his name and his husband's name. And he was denied a license with his hyphenated name by DPS. However, he settled for a license with just his name, which is half of his real name at this point, because he wanted to be able to vote for Wendy Davis. That was his, those were his words exactly. Huh. He said, I kind of sacrificed that because I want to be able to vote, which is, you know, very interesting because obviously Wendy Davis is running against Greg Abbott, who's defending the same-sex marriage ban.
It all comes home.
Yeah.
I was going to ask, do we have any sort of numbers on the amount of people that are affected by this?
No, I mean, I don't think they track it, and I think some other media outlets have actually asked for that, and they have said that we don't track that. But yeah, and there is some question as to whether, like, at what point you're in the system, because apparently Connie Wilson said that before they even started to type anything into the computer, this came up. But the other gentleman I spoke with said that all his information was in the system, and they came back and said, we cannot give you a license with your hyphenated last name on it. And he said, well, cancel the transaction, and I will go get a passport. And they said to him at that point, well, you're already in the system, implying that even if he went and got a passport and came back, they would already know who he was, which is kind of scary, and deny him on that grounds.
The idea is that they're at the point at which they determine that you are in a same-sex marriage, or somehow, like, you know, flagging your file for future reference?
It sounds like they very well might be, because he told me that he requested to cancel the transaction when he found out it wasn't going to be accurate, and they said, you're already in the system. So whatever you do, you know, to try to rectify this will be to no avail, because we already know about you. So I guess if he comes back with a passport, they're going to be like, how did you get this passport?
Wow.
You know, I mean,
maybe people should start filing information requests on their name with DPS and find out what they've got.
I mean, don't wonder if they have a little electronic checkbox that says gay marriage or no. I mean, it sounds like they're going out of their way to make an issue of this.
Right.
I mean, you can have a policy and then sort of, you know, kind of sort of ignore it or kind of sort of enforce it. But anecdotally, at least, it sounds like this is something that someone in the system, DPS and beyond, has decided to really press as an issue.
Right. Is there a memo out there for DPS employees or something, you know?
I don't know. Maybe we need some further investigation.
I think so.
Well,
I'm
John,
happy to do it.
I was about to say, do you think you're going to stay with the story? Well, can we expect more from you?
Definitely. I mean, I think, you know, Connie Wilson, for one, is certainly going to be, she says that she intends to file a lawsuit against DPS. Now, we'll see whether or not that happens, but she's certainly going to, I believe, attempt to get her an accurate license. So we'll see where that goes. And, you know, following up with some of the other folks who've said they've had similar problems may yield some more interesting information about what DPS is actually doing and why. So stay tuned.
Great.
All right. Well, John, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
That's it for Observer Radio this week, but before we go, I'd like to thank Rosie and the Ramblers for providing our music, and of course, a big thanks to all of you out there listening to us. Observer Radio is recorded at Co-op Radio Studios in Austin, Texas. Our sound engineer is Tracy Schulz. For more Texas news and culture, you can visit us on the web at texasobserver.org, or you can pick up the latest copy of the Texas Observer at a store near you. We'll talk to you again next time on Observer Radio.